Hi everyone, I'm Judy.
And I'm Lizzie.
And welcome to Why We Left.
Hi and welcome.
Hi Lizzie.
What's up, girl? I'm sorry. I'm holding currently a toothbrush that Judy gave to me.
You're welcome.
Hey, it was from her dentist. Yep. She has another big stack of notes here. She is
not as big as last time. There's just like 5 pages.
Right. So that's like totally like, that's like a total normal amount of notes to have. Like, I think that's great. Yeah. So today, what are you talking about, Jane?
So I'm going over some verses in the Bible and some like common sort of misconceptions and assumptions about these verses.
Yeah, you are. And I know exactly what you're going to talk about. And nothing excites me more because this is something. First, do you remember our first episode? And I asked you about it.
Oh, yes.
And we did not have the answer. But now you've done your research. And I'm so excited to hear the answers because I've never heard this from anybody else. Mm-hmm.
I did like way more research than I needed to. I spent 2 full days researching.
What?
And at the end of it, like I said, I only have like 5 pages, but I was genuinely having fun researching this.
That's amazing.
I was learning so much about biblical history, and it was really fascinating.
This is incredible. So let us know. You can DM us. How did you enjoy last week's episode? Was it last week? It was a week before.
2 weeks ago.
Let us know if you enjoyed that, because I want to do something similar, so I just need to know if you enjoyed it. Or if you hated it.
Yeah. Like, if you want more research-based podcasts or, like,
more
stories.
More trauma dumping.
Which, yes, trauma dumping.
Do you want research or trauma dumping like that?
Well, I think it'd be cool to do some of both.
You're right. I agree with you.
Especially since I'm, like, boss at research right now. I'm getting into it.
I don't want you to stop. Okay. Well, how's your last couple weeks been?
Cool. You know me. I don't do much exciting stuff. I just kind of chill at home.
Yeah. How's cleaning?
And research. Oh, it's good. It's going good.
That's amazing. You got a new employee.
Yes. And I need to go, like, get a bunch of paperwork figured out, and I just...
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I hate it.
Paperwork is...
If I could just run a business and, like, only do actual physical work, that would be amazing.
That's almost like you just being an employee. You could do that.
Yeah, but I don't ever want to work for anybody else ever again in my life.
Okay, well, hire
I gotta someone. Be my own boss.
Hire someone to do your paperwork.
Yeah, but I can't afford it.
I'm so sorry. That's terrible.
But I'm gonna have to. Here we are.
Here we are.
How's work going for you?
It's going great.
Selling all kinds of roofs, aren't you?
Roofs. Roofs.
Yeah, I don't know if it's roofs or roofs.
Or, no, it's for sure roofs.
Roofs, like with the F.
I used to call them roofs.
Yes, I remember that.
Anyway, yeah, that's going great. I'm still learning, so I feel like ask me again in 2 months. And I got engaged.
Oh, yes. How could we wait this long to talk about it?
I can't imagine that we could, but...
You gotta give me all the details. What was going through your minds when you saw your boyfriend's down on one knee?
Like, okay, you know when something, like... I don't know how to explain it. My heart dropped, kind of. It was like I turned around and I seen it. My heart immediately dropped. But in a good way. Do you know what I mean?
Just kind of stopped.
Yeah, it just...
For a second.
Yes. I didn't know what to think. And then I was like... And then the first thing, after like my heart stopped a little bit, I was like, oh, he's joking. I thought he was joking.
Because he's such a prankster like that.
Yeah, and he's really nice. He's like the most serious man in the world. I looked down and I seen the ring. And then... And then immediate, like, waterfall. Describe. Can't.
And there's a video, and I've seen it, like, 50,000 times, because it's so precious.
I don't know if I get to tell you this, but he cried.
Really?
Yeah, he had little tears in his eyes. It was the best thing I've ever seen. I thoroughly enjoyed getting engaged. I recommend it. It's the best thing ever.
Like, you know what's even better?
Marriage.
Yes, getting married.
Do you know what's even better? I don't know where else I'm going with that. But do you know, like, when you got engaged?
Goes this way for you too?
I want to get engaged every single day. Like, it's such a crazy feeling. Like, I want to relive it over and over. I know what my reaction was. What can you do?
Why? What didn't you like about your reaction?
Just, like, the immediate, like, it was so, It was so like.
Yeah, but anything else wouldn't have been genuine. Right. And that's why the video is so cute, because you were just so clearly, just every emotion just on your face. And it was just like, oh my goodness.
I feel like, I don't know exactly how many podcasts it was ago, but I was literally asking. Yes, it's so crazy. This all happened so fast, and we've only been dating for like 6 months.
Oh, I know.
Judy's like, I know, girl. But like 6 podcasts ago, I was like, what do you think I should look for in a man?
Right.
And now here I am.
Engaged. That's crazy.
I wanna cry. Every time I think about it. The last 2 weeks I've cried like 12 times.
That's rookie numbers. I'm kidding. I've never cried that much in my life. Wrong. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's like everything, every sweet thing that I see or that I read, waterworks. It's so embarrassing. Like, I will cry at everything. So, yep, good times. And the ring is beautiful.
It is.
He did good. I'm proud. Anyway. Yep.
When's the wedding?
It is next year. Nice. I want to be more specific.
Yeah, nice.
Because it's so new.
I'm going to have a nice long engagement.
Yeah.
I love it. My engagement was exactly, 48 hours? And I loved it. I wouldn't do it any other way.
That's right. I forgot about that.
It would have been like 20 hours, but the day after we got engaged was Memorial Day, and so the courthouse was closed.
Wait, so this is almost your anniversary?
Oh, no, sorry. No, it wasn't Memorial Day. It was Labor Day.
Okay.
Because we got engaged in September and married in September.
That's so precious. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I remember, like, hearing that Judy was engaged, and then... And then just, like, immediately, yeah, she's getting married.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? What do you mean she's getting married? I wasn't even actually wondering. That's okay.
I'm That's sensing okay. that it's not. Should we get married again? So you can be there?
It's okay. And I will recover from that. It genuinely didn't bother
me. Yeah. I mean, if it happened today, you would definitely be at the courthouse with my sisters. But it didn't happen today.
Yeah, it didn't. And you're going to be at my wedding.
And I can't wait. Anything else you would like to say about being engaged? Or have we talked about this enough?
Let me see. Have I already told you that I'm engaged? I will say I'm very in love with my fiance, and I can always
Well, that's him. Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be ashamed if it wasn't that way, you know? Be like, uncomfortable.
I always said I'd be in love with marriage.
I still remember, like, when I first started realizing that you could be in love with the person you got married to.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started realizing that, and it was like, oh my gosh, that looks so cool.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I actually knew what love felt like, kind of. Mm-hmm. But, and, well, I'm kind of the opposite of that. Like, in my head, because I was a book reader, like, I read probably, I would say, 200 love story books. So I was expecting it to be all, like, sunshine and rose. But if you think about that, you're never gonna grow, you know, as a couple.
Love is a lot more and better than romance novels make it out to be.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's so much more fulfilling.
If you're gonna be in a relationship, you gotta compromise. And I hate compromise, but it's easy when it's
Because I don't know, for me, it doesn't feel like compromise. Yeah. It's like, oh, I wanna do whatever, like, makes you happy, you know? That's all I want, is for, like, you to be just as happy as you can possibly be. So anything I can do to make that happen, like, let me at it. It's not even a, don't even gotta think about it.
You're a saint.
No, my husband is just that amazing.
My husband-to-be husband is amazing as well. I think I'm just really hard-headed, but...
Yeah. Oh, I have to tell you this cute story about something William did the other day. Okay. I think I told you already, but I have to tell it again because it's so sweet. So the other night, he had to work late. He works at a hospital. Something was wrong, so they had to, like, call in other guys to come fix it, and he had to just sit at work and wait for these guys to show up. And he works 45 minutes away. So he calls me at, like, around 4 o'clock, which is when he usually gets home, and he's like, I have to be here for a little bit. And he's like, hey, I know it's supposed to, like, storm really bad. Like, there was tornado warnings and everything. And he's like, what if I pick you up and bring you to the hospital and we can just hang out and then, like, go home, whatever. These guys get here, it might be, like, really late. And that my brain was pretty shot at that point because I had been researching for the podcast all day and I'm not used to thinking that hard. And so I was just really tired and I was like, I don't know what I want. And I was like, babe, it's up to you. I don't want to make you drive all the way home, 45 minutes, yeah, just to pick me up. And so we get off the phone. And a minute later, I'm like, oh, wait, I actually, my friend is graduating tonight. And I was going to go to her graduation. So I call him back and I'm like, I actually, like, you really can't. That really won't work because my friend's graduating. I got to go to that. Yeah. Shout out to Andrea. She graduated, got her GED. So wildly impressive. Wow. But anyways, yes, for real. Anyways, I call him. He's like, oh, I'm on the way home. He's like, I thought I'd just come home and say hi to you. And then like, just go back to work.
It's so precious.
So this man drove 45 minutes home, saw me for probably 30 seconds, like gave me a hug and a kiss, and then left and drove 45 minutes back to work.
Just so he could see his wife.
For 30 seconds.
And you know what? It's you. So, I'm sure, yeah, it was 100% worth it for him. I'm sure he regrets, yeah. I would drive 45 minutes to get a hug and a kiss from you, girl.
Okay. I have the best husband in the world is all I'm trying to get at here.
Are you sure about that?
Yes.
Because I have the best. You know what? No. I have the best fiancé in the world. You have the best husband. And we're going to have to figure that out when the day comes.
Yeah. And we won't.
You're right.
Anyways.
That's a good time. Okay, should we dive in?
That's enough chit chat, I suppose. The people are probably,
skipping
ahead. Are shouting. Yes.
They're probably skipping ahead right now.
Oh, yes.
What?
Anyways. So the first verse that I want to go over today is in 1 Timothy. Hang on. Let me go look it up so I can read it to you guys. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 9. Let me read it in the King James Version. In like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with braided hair, or gold, or pearls, or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness, with good works. So I don't know about you, but this is a verse I heard a lot when I was growing up. Anyways, so instead of talking more about that, I think I'll just talk more about what this verse actually means. I'm going to break it down a little bit. I have the Greek translations for each word. So the first word is modest, and the Greek word for modest is kosmios or kosmios. There was a couple different pronunciations, so I'm just going to go with both of them. Anyway, and it means decorous, respectable, well-ordered, and honorable. So all of these words kind of make modest sound more like a state of being and like a state of mind rather than a state of dress. I don't think modesty should be limited to just what we wear. You know, it's more just, it's a state of being. It's a state of being respectable and well-ordered and honorable. And like, who wouldn't want to be honorable? You know what I mean? But anyway, next word is apparel. The Greek word for that is katastole, which means appearance, behavior, and arranging in order, adjustment of dress, apparel/dress. So here you can see again, it refers to like your appearance and your dress, but it also refers to your behavior. So next word is shamefacedness, which is kind of a funny word to me. I don't know. It's not one that I've ever heard used in everyday language. Yeah. Anyway, so the Greek word for shamefacedness is eidos, and it means decency, modesty, and reverence. It also, there's another translation I found that says it's basically a quality, it's a feeling of reverence, which restrains from doing wrong. So next word is sobriety, shamefacedness, and sobriety. Greek words for sobriety is sophrasuna, which means propriety, appropriateness, reasonableness, and mental soundness, sanity, soundness of mind, a sane mind, female modesty. There again, it's an attitude, you know, an attitude of appropriateness. Anyways, I also looked up the Greek words for like braided hair, gold, pearls, and they all just pretty much directly translate to braided hair, gold, and pearls. And just a little side note here, that I thought was really cool. The Greek word that they use for adorn is kosmeo, and it means to make beautiful, decorate, embellish, to honor, dignify, which I thought was really cool. The Bible says in like manner that women adorn themselves. And the original Greek word, it literally translates to make beautiful. We as women are allowed to, even encouraged to, make ourselves beautiful, which is cool because I feel like growing up, you know, I never felt that attractive. And it kind of felt like the uglier you were, the holier you were. So it feels good to know that that's not necessarily what the Bible says, you know, and I don't know that that's something people ever said, but it was the feeling that I had, you know? But anyway, and now I want to give like some of the context behind this verse, like what was going on in the area at that time, what was going on in that church, what was going on in the town around that church. This church was in a Greek town that was filled with pagan worship. There was temples that were built to honor different gods, different Greek gods, and so on. In that era and that area, these like pagan women dressed themselves basically as high class prostitutes. And this is not my words. This is like the historian's words. They dressed themselves using really expensive jewelry and clothes. And their hair was like a really big deal. They would braid gold and pearls into their hair and do these really ornate hairstyles. And during that time in ancient Rome and Greece, clothing was a really big deal, and it was a way of advertising social status. The fancier you dress, the richer you were, whereas the poor people wore just, you know, super plain clothes. So yeah, expensive jewelry and clothes that were dyed different colors, those were signs of wealth and social status. Especially, fun fact, the color purple was made from these crushed sea snails, so it was really rare. So rich people would wear purple stripes in their clothing. The only person that was allowed to wear clothing that was completely purple was the emperor, but his senators and stuff could wear purple stripes. Yes, so you could even kind of tell like what kind of position somebody held in the government depending on like the placement of the stripe. I don't remember everything because I didn't write it down, but like a stripe across your shoulder meant you were like this, and a stripe across the bottom meant you were, anyway, so it's kind of cool. But anyway, and hairstyles were also a really big deal, and hairstyle trends were changing constantly. Like, clothing trends, they were kind of the same everywhere, and they didn't change that much. Because, like, I don't know, at that point, I guess you have fairly limited options. But hairstyles were constantly changing, and they were a big deal to women in that time. So, it makes sense that Paul would be addressing this specific church about this specific issue of basically, like, you don't need to flaunt your wealth to be trying to appear better than other people. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's basically his kind of goal here.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to flaunt your wealth to make other people feel like less. And I do believe that is ultimately what this verse is talking about, is he's speaking about displays of wealth. Like, that's what the verbiage and what the context would suggest. Next verse I want to talk about is in the same chapter. Next verse down, 1 Timothy, 2nd chapter, verse 11. Let women learn in silence with all subjugation. But I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. So let me go through and break down some of the language and some of the Greek words that were originally used in this verse. So the first one is silence. The Greek word for silence is hesokria, which means quietness, silence, settling down, lack of disturbance, tranquility, and silent attention. Feel like that's pretty
straightforward.
Yeah, feel like that's pretty straightforward. And then the next word I want to break down is subjugation. Greek word for subjugation is hupatharge, which means obedience, submission, and subordination. The next word is suffer, but I suffer not a woman to teach. Greek word for suffer is epetrepo, which means to let, allow, give permission, to permit. And something that's kind of interesting about this word is that the way Paul used it was in a present tense. It's not a permanent thing, if that makes sense. He's like, it's almost like he was talking about a specific situation, but like in this time, I suffer not a woman to teach.
That what makes you think that?
This is historians, people who are experts on the Greek language. He used this word in the present tense. And also something that some of them pointed out that I think is interesting. In this verse 11, Paul says, let the woman, singular, learn in silence with all subjugation. But I suffer not a woman, again, singular, to teach. The verse right before that, he says, but which becometh women, plural. Yeah, the verse right before verse 11. Verse 10 says women, and then verse 11 says let the woman. So it implies that he was talking to a specific woman. Otherwise, why would you just change the wording like that? Again, this is something that historians have pointed out as interesting. The language used in this verse implies that he's talking to a specific woman in that church. But anyway, that was just a fun little fact that I thought was pretty interesting. So verse 12, but I suffer not a woman to teach. So the Greek word for teach is didasko, which means to instruct, to provide info in a manner intended to produce understanding, to speak in public assembly, to direct and admonish. And then the next word, well, this is actually two words, so it's a phrase, but to usurp authority. The Greek word for that is authentio, which means to have authority over or domineer. What's really interesting about this particular word, authentio, it's used nowhere else in the Bible. Like, this Greek word does not occur anywhere else in the Bible. So historians have kind of a hard time nailing down what exactly Paul meant when he used this word. But the most, like, popular translation is, like, domineer, dominate, which I think is interesting. Let me give you a little context of this church and the women in this church. So many of the women in this church were formerly priestesses and prophetesses, because there was a temple in this town that was dedicated to a Greek goddess. And so a lot of the women of this town were prophetesses and priestesses in this temple. So they had a lot of authority over people. And then some of the women converted to Christianity. And, you know, they were used to teaching people and they were used to having authority. So they come into this Christian church and they kind of think that they can just jump right back into doing that. But Paul's kind of saying, you need to learn more of God's teachings before you start just thinking you can teach other people. You need to have a little more information, a little more wisdom, a little more knowledge before you just start teaching other people, which makes sense. You know? And also the context for this whole chapter is Paul is basically giving instructions for public worship. So I think when we're reading these verses, we need to look at it through that lens. And there was also another fun fact about these Greek women who converted to Christianity. Some of them did have male slaves and servants. And I think the verse where Paul's saying, you know, women should not usurp authority, which basically the Greek word means domineer and dominate. He might be saying literally, like, you're not allowed to dominate a man. You're not allowed to have the kind of power over men where he's your slave or your servant, which, you know, it makes sense to me. I don't think anyone should have that kind of authority over anyone else. We are all supposed to be free and equal, and we are all equal in God's eyes, you know? Okay, so that's kind of all I have about these verses in Timothy. But I feel like it's really important when reading the Bible to look at the historical context, because I think everything that is in the Bible is there for a reason and we can learn from it. But I also think that it's very important to look at context. Look at the whole chapter, not just one verse. Look at the verse in the context of the whole chapter, and also in the context of what was happening around that time, because it helps you figure out why Paul is saying what he's saying. And that's important. That's important to understanding scripture, you know, and understanding God's message in scripture. And I think the message that God's trying to bring forth here is people are to be equal. Women are supposed to be equal to men. And also, we're not supposed to put ourselves above other people with how we dress. We need to behave. We as women, specifically in these verses that I'm talking about, we need to behave with respectableness, with honorableness, and godliness above all else, you know? So now, let me move into 1 Corinthians 14, verse 34. Let me read it for you. Let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is not permitted unto them to speak, but they are commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. And if they will learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is a shame for women to speak in the church. So again, the context of this entire chapter is basically instructions for public worship and how people are supposed to act and behave and say during church services and during public worship, you know? And basically just how to go about worshiping together in an orderly fashion where everybody is taken care of, you know? So yeah, I think we already went over. There was some words in this verse that were in the last verse in Timothy. But the word, the Greek word for obedience that's used in this verse is hypotasso, and it means to be put in subjugation, subordinate, to submit, to be subjected, to place or arrange under, to bring under influence, render obedience. So first of all, I think it's really obvious that Paul did not think women have no place in the church, because he actually had quite a few women that served alongside him. They were part of his ministry and they taught other people and they served other people alongside them. I don't think it's fair to take these two verses that mention women being silent and say that Paul didn't want women teaching in the church, because that's so clearly not true. And then also, if you think back to some of the women leaders in the Israelites, like Deborah in the Old Testament, she led the armies of the Israelites. So I don't think these verses mean that God has a problem with women leading, but like, let's keep talking about it, you know? So let's talk about the context of this verse in this chapter. So Paul wrote these verses in a letter to the church of Corinth. In that time, in that church, the services were sort of patterned after the ones in Jewish synagogues. And in Jewish synagogues, the seating was always segregated. Men would sit on one side, women would sit on the other side. And in the church of Corinth, sometimes during services, women would ask their husbands for an explanation when they didn't understand something. And since their husband was across the room, they probably had to ask it rather loudly. And notice how Paul says, your women. He's not saying all women. He's saying your women, like the women of this church specifically. So I think this phrase, let your women keep silence in the church, means literally be silent, like don't be talking during the service, which makes sense to me, because you can't have a church service where a bunch of people are trying
everybody
to talk,
hollering at each other.
Yeah.
Yo, David, what does this mean?
Exactly. Like, that's, you know, then you're disrupting other people's time of learning, you know? So that makes sense to me. And, you know, it makes sense, like, again, same as in this other, the church that Paul was writing to when he wrote Timothy, these women didn't come from a Jewish background. They were pagan women before they converted to Christianity. So they weren't used to Christian services. And in these Christian services that were being held, like, there was an order to things, you know? You weren't supposed to just have everybody speaking at once. There was supposed to be each different people got their time to speak, you know? Which I think is very reasonable. I think it's one person speaking at a time. That makes sense to me.
So this might be completely obvious, but why? So I'm just playing the devil's advocate here, but why is he only speaking to women, you know?
Maybe because they were the ones that were interrupting the service. And also, like I said, this whole chapter is instructions about public worship. So there are instructions here for men, and also just instructions for the people that go to this church, be it men or women. But I think in this instance, it was probably women specifically that were being rather disruptive.
That completely makes sense to me. I love a good disruptive woman, you know what I'm saying?
Don't we all? I think that's everything we gotta say about 1 Corinthians chapter 14, women being silent. I think the takeaway from this is not that women are not meant to be leaders and they are not meant to teach. The takeaway is that there is a time and place. I think the overall message that we get in 1 Corinthians 14 is just what a Christian church service should look like, and that each person that wants to speak should get their chance to without all kinds of other people trying to jump in. Because there's also in this chapter, this verse talks a lot about speaking in tongues and praying in tongues and doing so during a church service. And Paul basically tells them, like, hey, that's great, but if people are going to be speaking in tongues, first of all, you shouldn't have a bunch of people speaking at one time. You should just have like two or three get up and speak. And they also should not speak in tongues unless there's somebody there to prophesy. Like, everything that is being done in the church service is supposed to be done for the edification of other believers. So this church service is supposed to be about everybody, not just one person. Everyone is supposed to be encouraged. I think that's kind of the overall message that we should take from this verse. This chapter. And of course, there's a lot more there, but we don't need to go into all of it today. Anyways, next verse I want to talk about is, well, it's actually several verses, and they are in 1 Corinthians 11. We are going to start with verse 5. But every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered dishonoreth her head. For that is even all one, as if she were shaven. But if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God. But the woman is the glory of man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither is the woman without the man in the Lord. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman of God. Judge in yourselves, is it comely that a woman pray unto God uncovered? Doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him? But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. But if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. That was 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 5 through 16. So that was a lot of verses. But anyways,
it comes right down to saying the whole argument is like, people saying, what does he mean? He says your hair is your head covering.
Yeah.
But then people are like, no, that's not what that means.
Yeah.
What do you mean? That's it literally says that. So how can
you? Yeah, it says her hair is given to her as a covering. And I have heard people say, they talk about how in verse 6, where it says, let her be covered, people say that the Greek word for covering there is different than the verse where it says her hair is given her for a covering. And so he's not actually saying her hair was given her for a covering. But I looked it up. And that's not necessarily true. The Greek words used for covering are different in both those verses, but they also both mean essentially the same thing. Hang on, let me go find my notes. I took so many of them and they're all messed up. So the Greek word in the verse that says, but if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. The Greek word there is katakaluto, and it means to veil oneself, to be veiled or covered. And then in the next, a few verses down, where it says her hair is given her for a covering, the Greek word for covering there is perimbalion, and it means that which is thrown around anyone, a covering, a cloak. So these words are different, but they both mean covering, a piece of fabric to cover yourself with. Anyway, so have you ever heard people say that? Like, oh, Greek words are different, so.
I've never actually heard a good argument for why coverings are necessary.
Yeah.
Like, I've never heard a great one. I would love to hear somebody's argument about it. I would love to know why you think the way that you do. But as of now, I've never heard it.
So.
Like, the one argument I heard is just like, because the Bible says so. But right. The Bible doesn't say so. So stop saying right. that. Give me a reason for how. Why do you interpret that verse?
You know what I've also heard people say is they're like, well, you know, you should just do it just to be safe.
Yeah.
Because like maybe the Bible doesn't actually mean you should wear a covering, but we can't know that for sure, so you should just wear a covering just to be on the safe side.
First of all,
and I just feel like that's just not a good reason.
The thing is God, like, God did not put us down here to play a guessing game. Yeah. He's going to be clear about what he means, and I feel like that, like, I'm not saying you're not entitled to your own opinion, but in my eyes, that is about as clear as it gets.
Right.
And so, yeah, you can think the way that you want to think, but I don't think that that's a good excuse whatsoever.
I don't think that's a super compelling reason to do anything. No. It's like, oh, you should just do it to be on the safe side.
Yeah.
That's just not a super compelling reason to do anything, really. Except maybe wear your seatbelt.
Right.
But it is something, like, this subject, growing up, was something that I heard talked about so much. I think I heard more sermons or talks or services or whatever you want to call it. I heard more about head coverings than pretty much any other subject. Yeah. And I just feel like that's just, it's so not proportional. These few verses in the Bible, they're the only times in the New Testament that mention a head covering. So then why are you basing a whole religion around wearing a head covering? Meanwhile, the Bible, like, the New Testament is filled with God talking about loving other people and how to love other people well. Why are we not dedicating more of our sermons to that subject, you know? Because God certainly has a lot more to say about that. But anyway, I want to give you some of the context around these verses. And why Paul was talking about this.
Please do.
So, number one, among the Israelites, women being covered was a pretty big deal. A lot of women would even cover, like, the lower part of their faces. So their hair was covered and then also the lower part of their faces. And this is something that was done among married women. If you were married and you were not wearing a veil, it was a big deal. It was basically kind of like advertising yourself as being available sexually.
That was a crazy way to say that.
I know, right? But anyway, and then there's also in these verses, Paul also talks about, like, shaving your head. And that was also something that had a lot of significance in among the Jewish people and the Israelite faith and culture. So some of the circumstances around getting your head shaven were to signal disgrace or sorrow or mourning. Like, think about, do you remember the verses in the Bible that talk about these Israelite men went to talk to, I forget who, the Ammonites or something, another ethnic group in a different town. They went to talk to them to, like, some peace talks, basically. And they got half their beards shaven off and sent back. And then they had to, like, go hide or whatever till their beards grew back. So, like, it was such a disrespectful thing to do because, like, Jewish men, they weren't allowed to trim their beards, shave off a little, like, corner, like, shape them, nothing. You let your beards grow. You did not shave them.
Let me ask you a question. What happens if you can't grow a beard?
Oh, I was thinking about that too. I was like, well, these poor men who just have baby faces and can't grow a beard.
They're disgraceful. Yeah. If you have a baby face, you're a disgrace.
Yes. But anyway, that's more about men. But so, like, men would shave their heads to symbolize mourning sometimes. Like, think about Mordecai. Is it Mordecai? Esther's?
Why are you saying Mordecai?
I know. Why am I saying that? Okay, the Esther's cousin in the Bible that was raising her. Remember when he covered himself in sackcloth and ashes and, like, tours and, like,
I do want to talk more about that. But let me ask you a question. You say Mordecai?
No, I don't. Do I? I don't know. I don't. Let's not talk about that anymore. So I don't even know what I was saying there. I can't even remember who Mordecai is.
I'm just going to say it right that time. You did. It's Mordecai. But you do you, queen. I love that. His name is Mordecai.
Yes, it is. But anyway, I've completely lost track of what we were talking. Oh, yes. So another kind of crazy thing so women specifically, when their heads got shaven in the Israelite group, it was because they had been convicted of adultery or prostitution. Mm-hmm. And so they would get their heads shaven as a sort of testament to everyone around them. But, so, you know, that's kind of crazy. That feels like a lot. But it was the times. What can you do?
Well, and you know what? It's not okay to shave your beard as an Amish man.
That's true.
Like, I remember hearing about some beard shave. Like, do you remember that?
Oh my gosh. Memory unlocked. Yeah.
The people who went around cutting people's beards.
Yeah, and it was like a hate crime.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy. I completely forgot about that. It's honestly a terrible thing to have happen to you. Can you imagine?
Just like getting woken up in the middle of the night, somebody shaving off your beard.
Right? That's crazy. That's terrible. Somebody had a vendetta.
I need that to happen to me, because
I'll shave your beard.
I got a lot going on up there.
Yeah. How did we get here?
I'm not making fun of that situation, because that literally sounds awful, and I'm so sorry. If you had your beard shaven off, I want to reach out to you.
Yeah. Maybe you pay for your therapy.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Anyway, so that's kind of what was going on with the Israelite community, like the significance of coverings for women and the significance of having their heads shaven. But now let's talk about Corinth, the town of Corinth, which is where the church existed that Paul was writing this letter to. So in this town, married women wore coverings on their heads. And if you took that covering off, and you were just seen out and about in public without your covering, it brought a lot of shame on your husband because it meant that you were sexually available. It's crazy, but okay. Like I said, it was the times.
Shinda.
You're gonna make fun of me for saying more to K.I., but you're gonna...
Shinda is a real word that people use.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Well, shinda buck. That is a thing people say.
Is that a Dutch word or something?
I don't know what it is, actually. I grew up hearing that word all the time.
It's not an English word, I can tell you that much.
I wonder if that's an actual word. Hey, Siri? Is shinda a word?
It's a word?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a Swahili word. It's not an English word, though.
In Japanese, it means dad.
In Japanese, it means died.
Died! Let me ask you a question. If anybody's listening to this and you come from my area and you grew up saying shinda, please let me know, because I don't want to feel alone in this anymore. Every time I say that word, whoever's with me is like, what?
Maybe you should stop saying it
then. No, it's engraved in my bones.
Well, then, like, don't complain about feeling alone when you say it. If you're going to keep saying it.
You know what I mean? Don't make fun of my culture. That's my culture, and you're making fun of it. And that's really disrespectful.
I think you mean cult.
She doesn't mean what she just said. She means nothing. Okay, she means it. And that's fine. She is loved. Okay.
I take it back. I don't know. Anyways, what were we talking about? Oh, yes. So, Corinth, if you were married and you weren't wearing a covering, you were looking to get some.
You wanted to step out on your old husband.
Yes, you wanted to step out on your old man. It was just... It was a thing. And then also, in Corinth, there was a temple known as the Temple of Venus or the Temple of Aphrodite. And in this temple, there was 1,000 priestesses. And in the night, they would go down into the city and have sex for money.
The priestesses would?
Yes.
The
And obviously, they did not wear veils because... During this time, if you had, like, a shaved head or you didn't wear a veil, there was a good chance you were a prostitute, because that was kind of how they advertised themselves. Anyways, so I think maybe the reason Paul was writing to the women of this church and being like, you might want to consider, like, covering your heads, it might be because this was the culture that was surrounding them, and he was kind of trying to protect them.
See, that makes so much sense. Like, yeah. That's the thing. People don't read the Bible in context. They just like, bam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bam, Ryan Ulrich would say, boom, shake the room. It's really, really cringy, and I never want him to say it again, but I'll say it.
I've never heard anyone say that in my life.
Boom, shake the room. It's the worst thing I've ever heard. Okay, go ahead. Do you want me to say boom, shake the room again?
No, I'm good. Thank you. You don't have to do that. So, like I said, I think maybe the reason Paul's saying, consider covering your heads, possibly, is because he was trying to protect women, because unfortunately, in that time, not wearing a veil meant that you were a sex worker, you know?
Don't be a
And
sex worker.
obviously, in that time, there was a lot of shame put on like sex workers and prostitutes. And, you know, I don't think that's okay. I don't think it's ever okay to shame anybody. But unfortunately, in that time, that's how it was. And Paul was trying to protect the women of the Church of Corinth from being shamed like that, you know?
Paul's a protector.
He's a good dude.
Go Paul, go Paul. Is Paul with Saul previously?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm glad. See, if you are a Saul now, you can be a Paul. Does that make
Right?
sense? Yeah.
Yes. Anybody can change.
Be a Paul, not a Saul. That's right. I don't know.
Oh, let me just finish rolling my nose. But I also want to point out some things that I don't know if they're necessarily relevant, but I found them very interesting. So, number one, I was thinking about it and I was like, how did it even start that women were wearing coverings and veils on their heads? Because it did start in the Old Testament, maybe even as far back as like 500 BC is when it first kind of started. But it was not something that God told anybody to do. It was God never once in the Old Testament said women should cover themselves
You feel like that
or
was a
should cover
thing?
their head,
Do you
excuse
feel
me.
like that was a thing that he told Paul to share? In those times, he would
Yeah.
like speak to them and like.
Yeah. I mean, I think he still speaks to us. I mean,
No, I'm saying
I
like,
do think there's like a reason that that particular few verses is in scripture,
yeah.
because all scripture is inspired by God. But again, I think the context is very important. Like this, what was happening in that city at that time is very important to understanding why Paul was saying those things.
Yeah, 100% agree.
But anyway, so let me continue with this thought here. So I was trying to look into like when did women actually start wearing coverings and why? And so like I said, there's research done that it was started in maybe like 500,000 BC. Somewhere in that time frame is when it kind of started and started in ancient Mesopotamian and Assyrian societies. And so why it kind of started, it was sort of a status symbol. Free women, because in that time, you know, there's a lot of slaves and servants, and then you have the freemen and the free women. And so it was something that free women would wear to signify that they were under the protection of a man, like a husband or a father, or, you know, so. And it was actually illegal for slaves or prostitutes to wear them because they were not free women. They were not under the protection of any men. So sad, honestly. Yeah.
Why? Yeah.
Anyway, and in ancient Israel, they also practiced this same kind of head covering. And also, okay, in these ancient times, hair was a big deal. Like it was considered just a symbol of women's sexuality and femininity. And so, like, men seeing women's hair was like the equivalent to seeing,
Like angles to
which,
honestly.
but that's how it was in those times. Like, seeing a woman's hair in ancient Israel was like, you might as well just see her whole body naked.
That's crazy.
I know, it is. It's just hard for me to wrap my mind around a little bit. So that's partially why covering their hair was such a big deal, because it was a part of their like sexuality, which feels insane that I'm even saying these words, but it was the times.
It's the times.
But so another little interesting thing, something that I thought was interesting is there is a place in the Old Testament where God commands someone to wear a head covering, and it was a man, and it was the priest. In the Old Testament, there is orders given directly from God that priests were supposed to wear turbans on their heads when they went into the most holy place, which is the part of the temple where God dwelled, basically. And so, you know, when they went into this part of the temple, that was the most holy place. That was where you went to meet face to face with God. And priests were instructed to wear turbans. And then there was also Aaron, the first priest, the high priest. He was instructed to wear this medallion on his forehead that said, "Holy to the Lord." And he was supposed to wear this on his forehead so that God would like accept the people, which is kind of crazy. And you know, now when Jesus died on the cross, the veil in the temple that separated the rest of the temple from the most holy place, which is like where God, the seat of God, you know, that only priests were allowed to go into. That veil that was shielding the most holy place from the rest of the world got ripped in half the second Jesus died. And it's this symbol that everywhere is now the most holy place. We can go to God ourselves, and we don't need, and what's the word? We don't need somebody to intercede for us on God's behalf, like a priest. We are, at all times, in the presence of God. God is around us, and God dwells in us if we're Christians, you know? Which is, like, a little side tangent, but I just think that's so cool. Just the symbolism of that veil in the temple being torn in half is so cool. But anyway, like I said, that was just something that I thought was kind of interesting. And then also, in the ancient Israelite communities, there was the Nazarites. And it was basically the people that took these extreme vows. And one of these vows was like they were going to let their hair grow. They were not allowed to shave or cut their hair as long as they were in this vow with God, this Nazarite vow. And yeah, this was something that men did in ancient Israel. Some verses in Acts 21. See, the context for this verse is Paul goes to Jerusalem and meets like some of the brothers and believers there, and he's like telling them about his missionary journeys and all the things that God is doing among the Gentiles being saved and turning to God right and left. He's telling them about this, and they're praising God, and then they tell him this: "You know, dear brother, how many thousands of Jews have also believed, and they all follow the law of Moses very seriously. But the Jewish believers here in Jerusalem have been told that you are teaching all the Jews who live among the Gentiles to turn their backs on the law of Moses. They've heard that you teach them not to circumcise their children or follow other Jewish customs. What should we do? They will certainly hear that you have come. Here's what we want you to do. We have four men who have completed their vow, the Nazarite vow. Go with them to the temple and join them in the purification ceremony, paying to have their heads ritually shaved. Then everyone will know that the rumors are all false and that you yourself observe the Jewish laws. As for the Gentile believers, they should do what we already told them in a letter. They should abstain from eating food offered to idols, from consuming blood or the meat of strangled animals, and from sexual immorality." So the first Christians were Jewish. So the people that kind of started the Christian faith were Jewish, and they were following the law of Moses, which we talked about slightly in our last episode, but it was all these laws and rules that God laid forth in the Old Testament, like these ritual sacrifices that they would do, just all kinds of rules. Like, it was pretty intense. And some of these rules that they had were that you should abstain from eating food offered to idols, you should abstain from consuming blood or the meat of strangled animals, and abstain from sexual immorality. So when Gentiles first started becoming Christians, it was kind of a thing where the Jewish Christians were like, hey, these Gentiles aren't following the law of Moses like we are, and like, is that okay? Shouldn't they be doing all the things that we are if they want to be Christians? So what the Jewish Christian leaders of the church are saying in this verse, they're saying, as for Gentile believers, like, these are the instructions for them. They don't have to follow the whole law of Moses. They need to abstain from eating food offered to idols, consuming blood or meat or the meat of strangled animals, and from sexual immorality. And just like, notice in this list of things that the Gentile believers were supposed to abstain from and do, the covering, wearing a covering, is not in that list. So I just wanted to like point that out. Anyway, and 1 Corinthians was written before the events in Acts that I just read. Anyway, my phone. I also just want to point out these verses in 1 Corinthians 11. Like, Paul talks about women wearing a head covering, and then at the end of it, he says, if anyone wants to argue about this, I simply say that we have no other custom than this, and neither do God's other churches. All the sermons that I heard about head coverings and the importance of them, like, none of them ever mentioned this verse. And I think it's really important. He's basically saying, like, Well, the verse before this, he says, women's hair has been given to her as a covering. But if anyone wants to argue about this, I simply say that we have no other custom. So I take that to mean he's saying, do what you want, like wear a covering or don't. Among the churches of God, we have no such custom.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's good to have convictions. And I also think that God gives each of us different convictions as far as like what to wear and how we dress. I think it's different from each one of us because we all need different things. And God has a very personal and unique relationship with each one of us. So we all kind of, I mean, there's some things that are clearly laid out in the Bible, like that we should and shouldn't do, like the Ten Commandments, you know, don't kill, don't steal, don't commit adultery, like that kind of thing. So there's some stuff that's laid out like that, that we all need to be like doing or not doing. But then there's some things that are not clearly spelled out in the Bible and that are a matter of personal convictions, and how we dress and whether or not we wear a covering on our head. Those are a couple of things that are between you and God. If you want to wear a covering, that's awesome, do it, but don't expect everyone else to dress exactly the way you do, because we all have different convictions and God convicts each of us about different things, you know. So, and you know, this is something that's very much for me. I don't ever want to be so arrogant as to think I have all the answers and what I'm doing, everyone else should do. I don't ever want to be that level of arrogant. I don't want to be like that. So this is something that's for me. The things that are my personal convictions are not necessarily other people's convictions. And that's okay. That's between them and God. What I need to do is follow the convictions that God gives me. I'm responsible for myself and my behavior and my outward appearance. And no one else's.
I love everything that you said.
Yeah. And also, I think I want to point out that this is something that's very hard for me, and I think Lizzie too, to talk about. Like right now, I'm feeling such a state of like disassociation.
Like this whole,
this is something that's really hard for me to talk about, because for me, head covering is a symbol of oppression. And like the years that I wore a head covering, those were the most miserable years of my life. When I tell you, I was so depressed and so hopeless. And so for me, like that's what a covering symbolizes. And I'm not saying that that's true, that's truth, but that is my experience. And so this is something that was, it's hard for me to talk about. And it was hard for me to even put myself in this headspace to like do this research. But I think it's important to talk about.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be one that was going to be fun to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, blah, blah, blah. But the second you like started talking, just immediate space out. Like,
yeah.
And not focus, cannot. It's so crazy how things like that work. Like,
right.
Yeah. Disassociation is another thing that I don't know if it'll be interesting to talk about, but it's so crazy how it works.
Right?
Yeah. The second, like, it's, yeah, like, talking about head coverings, because, Judy, I mean, that was the biggest argument between me and, like a lot of really mm-hmm. important people in my life. So, like, hearing about it again, it just takes me back to that. And then, yeah, so I'm sorry if I was really quiet, and I know it's hard for Judy, too.
Yeah, but not because of you, just because this subject is, like, I was also, like you said, I was surprised by how hard talking about this was for me. Like, during this whole episode, I just felt so, like, disassociated and, like, I couldn't get a clear thought in my head. So, you know, if you're listening to it and things don't make sense, it's because I was in a really difficult headspace. And like I said, I think it is important to talk about, because in so many churches, the head covering is used to oppress. And I don't think that's true of every Mennonite church or Amish church. And I don't think that's what the head covering is intended to be. But it is a fact that oftentimes the head covering is a symbol of oppression, and a lot of women who wear the head covering have no power and no say in their own lives, and that's just so incredibly damaging, and that is not at all what God wants.
Some of the stuff that you would say Like, it was hard for me to hear. Even though I completely agree, and I don't know even how to explain this, but you hear things so much, like, in your life, like, you hear a specific thing, and yet you know that you disagree with it, but then to hear someone else say the complete opposite is like, how do I say this? I wanted to push back a couple of times. No. No, don't say that. Like,
Yes.
but then, like, when you think about it, it's true. I'm like, but it's only because you've heard these things so much and you know.
It's almost like they're part of
Yeah.
you.
And so, like, hearing something else is kind of, it was a little bit triggering
Oh,
for
yeah.
me.
Yes. While I was doing this research, let me tell you, my nervous system was just like.
It seems like it would feel good to hear, like, kind of how you feel about a certain situation be, like, put into words like that.
Yeah.
But the way you feel and what's, like, engraved into your heart is two completely different things.
Yes.
And so then, like, yeah, it's so crazy. I can't believe that that's how I felt about that. Do you know what, I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Yes. I know exactly what you mean. I don't know if I could quite put it into words
Yeah.
like that, but yeah, just that insane like defensiveness
Yeah.
that
Yes.
rises up in me
Yeah.
that
Like, I
like
felt like,
when I was like reading some of this research and stuff like that, like just this
yeah.
defensiveness, and I was just like,
No.
no, this is
Propaganda.
yeah.
Yeah. And like, that's so, and this is like research. This is facts, you know? Yeah. That's so wild. I felt like my dad for a second. Like, I felt like,
No, you're wrong.
take this away from me. Anyway, so yeah.
Evil. Evil.
This woman speaks nothing, but yeah, wild, wild stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think that I've ever been that silent through an entire episode like that.
Don't think so either. That was a lot. I'm gonna have to like decompress. I did not realize how much this was going to affect me.
I don't even know what to say.
Yeah. You guys are just gonna have to hang out with us a little bit while we decompress.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how this one thing, a head covering, brings up so much emotion.
Yeah, and it's not
Like
something.
hard emotions.
It's so crazy because even after I left, I don't know if you remember. There's a couple times when I feel like I've told you, like, I almost feel convicted to wear a head covering. Like
Yeah.
there's something in me that's saying wear a head covering. But you have to be careful. Like, is it your conviction? Is that God speaking to you, or is that like just what you've been taught?
Yeah.
And because once you're taught something, well, you know what you know, and to go outside of that feels very scary, and it doesn't feel natural at all.
Right. Yes.
And so you have to be careful, like, is that conviction or is that things that have been taught?
Yeah. Yeah, 'cause I feel that too, 'cause I have these moments where I'm like, "Oh no, like I should be wearing a head
Yeah.
covering." But the thing about God's voice is that it comes with peace and clarity. And I've never, like, when I think about wearing a head covering again, it brings so much anxiety and fear and just feelings of shame. And none of those things come with God's voice. If you're experiencing those things, it means those things are not of God.
Yeah, I remember Joel telling me, actually, she said that at one point I was like freaking. I felt like I can't remember exactly what it was, but I felt like I should be doing something, and I
Yeah.
felt really bad about it. I felt terrible about it. I was like, I don't know, and like, I'm freaking out. And she said, God's voice is never condemning. She said, it's always gentle, it's always kind. She said, yeah, like, it's always peaceful, whatever. And that is actually, I feel like that's something that every single person in this world needs to hear, because.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, yeah, you can, there's always going to be voices. There's always going to be things that, like, you're thinking, like, internal thoughts that, like, oh, I should be doing this, oh, I should be doing that.
Right.
If it's something that is giving you anxiety, if it's making you panic, feeling like whatever, if it's just not a good feeling, I mean, obviously there's,
There's a good chance it's not God.
yeah.
If it's bringing with, yeah, if it has those feelings of anxiety and shame.
Exactly, that's exactly what I'm to say. So I think that's something that everyone should think about.
Yeah. And when God asks you to do like hard things, when he convicts you, he also gives you the power to change what you need to change so that you can align with those
Yeah.
convictions.
I feel like if you, that's another thing people tell you, listen, just listen. and you'll know if it's God or not. Yeah. And that's really hard to do sometimes, because how do you know what God's voice is?
Yeah.
How do you know what it sounds like? How do you know what it feels like? And that's something I struggle with a lot, actually, like, yeah. still.
And I think that's a pretty universal struggle. Yeah.
But I think that when God speaks to you, he's going to make it very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to make the decision, it might be a hard decision, but there's not going to be a way around it.
Yeah. Yes, I think you're right. That's how I kind of comfort myself too, when I'm like, oh, how can you know if this is what God wants you to do? God is the most powerful yeah. being in the universe.
Yeah.
He is all-knowing. He is all-powerful. He is all-caring. If he wants you to know something, you're going to know it.
Yeah.
He has, yes.
Yeah, for sure.
And not in a cruel way, but like, he's the most powerful being in the universe. If you need to know something, you're going to know it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't be out here underestimating God.
Anyway, sometimes. I don't know. Sometimes when I don't know what to say, I just start, like, kind of sing talking.
When I don't know what to say, I just say cool.
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 Or she says noise.
Oh, yeah, that too. Noise. Cool. Noise.
Yeah, hey, if I send her a snap, and then she sends back noise, I immediately feel ashamed.
But I love saying noise. That's what Jake says in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
No, but Jake says it like...
He's like, noise.
No, but Jake doesn't say it in like a condemning way. Like you.
I don't either.
This.
Just because you read it in a condemning voice does not mean that I text it in a condemning voice.
Okay.
When I say noise, I mean like, noise.
No, that is fine. She means it like... Noise.
Don't do this to me. You are not in my brain. You don't know.
Wait, but let me just say something really quick. If anybody agrees with me, let me know. I hate feeling alone in situations.
You think I'm just out here texting everybody noise?
That's right.
Because I'm not. Just you. Because you're special.
If I get a text from somebody, I can read the inflection.
You think you can read the inflection?
If I can immediately tell if that text is a bad text or a good text, I can tell if that person's mad at me or if they're actually
annoying. You think you can?
Yeah, that's right. But like,
because you always assume they're mad.
If somebody texts me and puts a period at the end of it,
that's just good punctuation.
I'm gonna cry.
But that's just good. I use punctuation in my text.
Do not use punctuation.
Because I'm a classy, knowledgeable lady.
Also, when they use exclamation points, they're like, oh yeah, that's nice. Exclamation point. Immediately, you don't want to ever talk to me again. Because,
girl.
That, in my head, that means that you're like forcing yourself to talk to me. And
okay, I don't think so I can exhausting. Ever text you again.
No,
when I send exclamation marks, it's because I'm excited. I'm so excited.
Never use punctuation. You can.
But that just makes it sound like I am mad. When I send a text without exclamation marks,
no,
it
just
sounds like I'm mad.
Like, just say. But then it's different when I text somebody and I use exclamation mark. That means I'm excited. But if you're sending, it makes no sense.
I'm going to give you some really good advice right now.
Okay.
Go to therapy. We need therapy.
Okay. Yeah, totally. That's something like, yeah, D'Angelo texts me and he's like, let me give you an example. Hey, babe, how are you doing? I miss you, !! Immediately, he's forcing himself to talk to me and he's really frustrated and he doesn't want to see me ever again. And then I space out. I won't, like, every time I get a text, or especially if it's a Snapchat, I'll half swipe it. And if I see an ounce of punctuation, I'm going to wait 2 hours to open it.
I'm just saying, I'm never texting you again.
Please.
Only phone calls from here on out.
Like, there was this one day, Judy and I were on the phone, and she said something, and I forget what you said, but immediately I was like, she's mad. And I went the whole next day thinking you're mad at me.
I'm so sorry. That sounds awful.
You're like, okay, I'm at this baseball game. I gotta go. Why do you have to go?
Because I was at my nephew's baseball game and he was about to win. And he did win. The other team didn't score a single run.
Oh, buddy. Yeah, no, that's...
I'm just supposed to miss out on his game that you can...
It's 100% a personal issue, and I don't expect everyone to, like, give in to my whims. I just think, like that's how I am, and I want to change at some point. I don't know. I'm very sensitive. I'm a very sensitive person. But...
Well, I understand. You know what it is? It's the trauma.
Another thing that's very offensive to me, do you want to know about it?
I don't know, do I?
If I offer you something, let's say, hey, do you want a drink of my water? Hey, do you want a bite of my food? Hey, do you want to go to my house later? And they say no, immediately offended.
I'm so sorry.
It makes me feel nasty. It makes me feel like you think I'm disgusting. And you don't even want to, like, put your mouth anywhere near mine was.
Yeah. And you know what? This is a me issue. I can't accept anything from anyone. Literally. And I'm working on it. I'm trying so hard. But when I tell you I cannot accept anything from anyone, you know. You've witnessed this.
Oh, yeah. And then two people like that just, like, clicking together. It's wild.
How are we still friends, you know?
But, yeah. Like, and it's not, like, I'm not joking when I say that. Like, yeah, I seriously get offended. Like, I'm gonna probably think about that for the next day. Dinner with my food.
I will try harder. I will eat all your food.
And that's not what I'm expecting. Like, I know that's, like, a personal issue. And I don't want anyone to give in.
That just doesn't mean I can't be more, I can't take that into consideration, though.
Yeah. I'm working on it. People are allowed to say no, and that's fine. That's fine. Like, if somebody says no to, like, hanging out with me, like, you want to go to South Pole? I don't really feel like, okay, that's fine. I don't care about that.
Mm-hmm.
Just if I offer you something of mine, and you don't want it, get wrecked.
Right. Because we're, you know, it's like they're refusing you.
Yeah.
They're refusing a part of you.
You don't care about me at all. You want me to fall off a cliff. And that's fine. You know, that's okay. So. Yeah. I do need therapy. I do know that. So.
Yeah, but we all do.
That's right.
Not just you. That's my advice to everyone. Every single person ever.
Therapy.
Get therapy.
Go.
It's always good to learn more about yourself.
Go speak.
And that's what therapy is ultimately about. Yeah. Learning more about yourself. Why you think the way you think. Why you do the things you do.
They will give you tools.
Why you are the way you are. Yes, we'll give you tools.
See, that's the thing.
On how to be a better person.
Therapy is not going to fix you. You have to fix yourself, but...
Therapy empowers you to do that.
Yeah. Like, you have to do all the work, right? But...
Yeah.
It just, like, therapy teaches you how to do the work. What you need to... I don't know what I'm talking
about.
And
a therapist will... help you.
Yeah.
You know? You don't necessarily have to do all the work all by yourself. Like, you've got God. You've got Jesus. You've got your therapist. You've got your friends. Your family, if you're lucky.
But ultimately, like, you're gonna have to do most of the work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But it's a realization we all gotta come to.
Oh, girl. I came to that very late.
I mean, you're only 19, so.
I keep
it. Probably not as late as you think.
That's another thing that's weird. Like, I don't feel 19.
How do you feel?
I feel
27?
Like...
37.
37. Yep.
You've been through a lot for someone who's only 19.
Yeah, that's why I'm so... Yeah. I feel like a lot of people think it's weird to get married at 19. I don't think it's weird because I don't feel 19.
And also, if you meet your person when you're only 19, like, your person is your person no matter when you meet them, so...
Exactly.
You meet them when you're 18, like... Marry them when you're 18.
Don't marry them when you're 17, because your frontal lobe is just not developed yet.
I mean, it's not developed at 19 either.
Okay, girl.
It's not even developed at 21, which is when I got married. Actually, no. Was I 22? I was 22. I got married, like, a couple weeks after my 22nd birthday. Oh. So I was 22. But still, frontal lobe, not fully developed. Yeah. Still wasn't.
So your frontal lobe develops when you're 21?
No, 25. Oh. That's when it's finished developing.
Okay, girl, we're on the same boat.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna be 20 when I get married. You're 20? That's okay, no one else to know. You know those?
Yeah, but also, you know, just because your frontal lobe is fully developed doesn't mean you suddenly know everything, so.
No, I'm gonna know everything.
That's how I feel, too. I'm like, two more years, man, I'm just gonna...
Two more years of life experience.
Mega mind over
Goodness
here.
Goodness gracious. So, fun!
I feel decompressed. I feel better.
I do as well. When I say period, I don't mean like period. I mean like period, end of sentence.
Yeah, like period, we're done with that.
Yeah.
So I guess it means we're done.
Like when my dad used to get mad, like give me lectures, he would say, "That's not happening, period."
That's kind of funny.
Like, you're not going there, period.
Period.
Period. And
what a queen.
No, for real. Like, my dad is a queen, and I believe that with all my heart. Like, he is a sassy.
Oh, is that a new watch?
That is a new watch.
Ooh.
I got
it. Cool. And it looks kind of vintage.
Do you know where I got it?
Walmart?
Try again. I got it at an
Amsterdam.
You have such low expectations for me. I got this from an antique shop.
You got a watch at an antique shop? And that's why it looks vintage.
And I got this bracelet at an antique shop.
Where is this? I'm going to need the address right now because that is such a good bracelet.
In Livingston. But this bracelet comes with a watch.
Oh, like they're set together?
No, this is...
Comes with a different watch.
You know the watch I wore to my photo shoot?
No.
Hold on, I'll show you. It's such a cute watch.
You have to send me all the pictures because I'm not on social media right now.
Let me show you. So this watch right here.
Ooh.
That comes with
that is pretty. I'm gonna need that address right now.
It's in Livingston, we should go.
I need some good antique things. You know what I'm saying?
I love going to I hate antique stores. The only thing I like about them is jewelry. They always have fire jewelry.
They just don't make it like that anymore.
And maybe that's just because we have good taste.
You and I, specifically? Yes, we do. Or were you talking about antique shops?
Taste? No, you and I.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Anyway, what time is it? Let me know.
It's 8 o'clock.
Oh, my God.
It's 8 o'clock.
Oh, dude.
Okay, this episode took longer than I thought. I thought it was going to be, like, 20 minutes. But anyway, we should pray for the people so that we can keep looking at your incredible engagement pictures.
Can I just mention something really quick? I love my tattoos so much.
I just love tattoos.
Oh my gosh. I've never seen, I don't know if I've ever seen my tattoos like that before.
Mm-hmm. Lydia is just such a good photographer.
She
really is. Every single one of these pictures is edited to perfection, and everything just looks so artistic and just so perfect. Her skills are insane. I just can't even.
Like, this picture is so freaking sweet. Oh my god. My favorite thing about it is every picture that she has of him smiling. Okay. Should we pray?
Yes, we should pray. Dear God, thank you for everyone who's listening. And God, I just pray that you will bless them. Just give them the best day ever, God. Just show them how much you love them. And God, I just pray for each and every one of us that you will guide us. And that when we need some help, you'll convict us. And then give us the strength to walk out those convictions, God. And God, just give us all your grace because you know we need it. And thank you. Thank you, Jesus. Amen.